Hey, nerds. We understand you. Drop those controllers. Lose the wizard hat. And ready your Cheetos. It's time for some hard-hitting talk about the movies, books, and games you love. So get ready, oh searcher of useless knowledge. It's time to step into the Geek Cave. Now, broadcasting from a top secret and totally awesome hidden base, I'm Kent Harris, and here's Darren Wright, Justin White, and Chad Savage.
And welcome back to another edition of Geek Cave Podcast Movies. Hold on a second, I'm buffering. I'm Darren.
I'm Justin.
And I'm Chad. Clever intro here. We are brought to you by Shirtosaurus, digging up clothing from the past so you can look rad today. With great t-shirt, sweater, and hoodie designs on everything geek chic, whether you're a fan of old school gaming, anime, 80s cartoons, or you're just weird, find something for you at Shirtosaurus.com. Also brought to you by Gamefly, with membership options for every budget, plus gifts for gamers of all ages. Gamefly has thousands of titles you can keep as long as you want. When you're done, just send it back with the postage paid envelope for a new one. Or keep it forever, pay a lot less than in-store prices. Sign up for a free 30-day trial right now using the link at geekcavepodcast.com. Fellas, it's been a heck of a week. Happy New Year to you.
Happy Yay. New Year.
Only like 4 days, 5 days late.
Yep.
But anyway, I went to Darren's for New Year's Eve, but I didn't stay late because he kept giving me that... you know, sharp jab in the ribs with his elbow telling me that he had some plans. So I didn't party. How about you, Justin?
Yeah, and I got a treat for you guys. Just kicking the year off right. Ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles!
Pilot party! Pilot party!
Pilot party!
Well, it sounded exactly like them.
Well, yeah,
it's amazing. Really.
It was them, you know.
Yeah, I'm amazed you were able to bring them back. Really.
Well, since the budget started over, I figured go big or go home, right?
However, it does mean that we have no budget for the rest of the year.
No. This is a good time to tell you that you can find the Geek Cave podcast on Patreon.
Really?
Yeah, you can. I've got nothing there right now, but the page is there. Give us a dollar, and we'll
figure something
wink
out.
Wink at you or something.
We're not above feet pics, just saying.
Shit, yeah, I mean,
I've got nice feet.
I'll take photos now. I'm not above it. You can't see my face. You don't know whose feet these are.
Circling back around, welcome to Pilot Party, where I review an entire TV series based only on the first episode. Why only the first episode? Clever reason. Here.
It just start stealing your idea, man.
No. We're recording this at the latter end of 2022, which means it is still able to use Legally Distinct.
Okay, all right.
This month, we are looking at Kuma 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 Bear.
Really?
I'm sorry, how do you spell that?
K-U-M-A.
Uh-huh.
K-U-M-A.
Okay.
K-U-M-A.
Uh-huh.
Bear.
Okay, cool.
Take notes. Which bear? Because there are two types of shows.
B-E-A-R. You know, rawr.
Okay.
Okay. Just, I guess technically this could still be one of those other types of shows.
All right.
Carry on.
I'll just take the notes. Go ahead.
A young boy named Kai bursts into the Adventurers Guild in a town of Cremornia, desperately searching for someone to help his village from a monster known as the Black Viper. Unfortunately, all the high-ranking adventurers are already out doing other quests. That's when Yuna, the bloody bear, shows up. She's a young woman wearing a bear onesie with bear puppets for hands. She calls forth her bear companions from the puppets, and they ride off to save the village.
Credits.
No. They arrive at the village and notice that it's very quiet. All the townsfolk are holed up inside for fear of the snake. Every time they try to escape, the Viper is attracted to the noise and attacks. Somehow, Kai managed to get away. Kai's father doubts very much that this low-level adventurer can do more than be the Viper's next meal. Yuna follows the Viper's tracks into the desert where they disappear. Using her bear vision, she finds it, and the battle is on. This thing looks like it belongs in a Godzilla movie. It is nastier and bigger than anyone guessed. Her fire attacks don't seem to work, and neither do her ice ones. Its thick skin prevents melee attacks from really doing anything. She takes a direct hit and muses, "That would have hurt if it weren't for my bear onesie." Yuna figures that the only way to attack the snake decently is get its insides. So, using the power of her imagination, yep, that happened, she traps the snake. With its mouth open, she unleashes her fire bears. They do the trick, and the Viper is defeated. She stores the corpse like you would a Pokemon and heads back to the village. Upon seeing her victory, they hold a celebration. Kai's dad apologizes for doubting her. Yuna goes back to the Adventurers Guild and reports what happened. Everyone is surprised by her victory. Cut to Yuna taking off her VR helmet. Apparently, it's all a game. She is a very smart and rich teenager. Her stocks are going up, her parents are on an extended vacation after the last round of money she gave them, and her grandpa insists that she come for a visit or he'll stop co-signing on her lease because she's a teenager and can't do that by herself. The episode ends with her going back to the game for a little while. It's cute. The super serious fantasy world is shaken up by the girl in an overpowered bear onesie. It's adorable.
All right.
Now for my predictions. Yuna goes on more adventures, making a name for herself. As the big bad of the series starts to enact their plans, it's revealed that Yuna's coming was foretold by legend. She is the one, Z. She gathers together a group of other comfortably garbed heroes, and they save the day. Normally at this point, I'd reveal the shocking truth that it's all a video game, but they already did that, so... yeah. I give it 4 out of 5 bloody bears that don't look nearly as terrifying as that sounds.
Okay. Huh. Well, thank you, Justin.
Yeah, welcome.
So, there are a lot of shows out there that live in the memories of TV land. Some of them are given new life, and some are relegated to the dustbins of history. This segment of the show asks you about one such forgotten piece of television history and asks, should we review it? It was good then, the original's just as good now. Reboot it, the idea is sound, but we can modernize it and capture some magic. Revive it, what are these characters doing after a couple of decades of growth and development? Or refuse it, Chad shakes heads disapprovingly. Airing on the Sci-Fi Channel, back when it was still spelled correctly, this show, filled with eccentric characters, demanded comparisons to such shows as Twin Peaks and Northern Exposure, taking place in a small town in the Pacific Northwest that is absolutely chock-full of super geniuses working on the latest and greatest experiments and scientific breakthroughs you could ever imagine. In a town where everyone is a bookish genius, you need a sheriff that is competent and down-to-earth.
Yes!
Enter Jack Carter, the Sheriff of Eureka.
Woo!
Beginning as a Disaster of the Week show before becoming arc-focused in its later seasons, Eureka typically involved the sheriff looking or feeling dumb before using his abundance of common sense to save the day. The ensemble cast is beautifully fleshed out within about 3 episodes, and from there it's off to the races, as long as those races are being done with flying solar-powered motorcycles.
Mm-hmm.
Over the 5 seasons, the characters create and solve problems, travel back in time, explore a bit of cyberspace and virtual reality, go to space, the actual one, and so forth. The show's plucky, oftentimes predictable, lacking the complexity of shows like Battlestar Galactica or even Stargate SG-1 for that matter. But with a focus on character, the show entertained for 6 years, making 5 seasons with 2 standalone Christmas specials in the mix. So when it comes to Eureka, review, reboot, revive, or refuse?
Revive. Just like a one-off movie, made-for-TV movie, something. I don't want to reboot it because it's hard to recapture Lightning in a Bottle. I'll always review it. Go back and watch it. Absolutely. And it ended on such a good note that I don't really want to continue it long term. But I think a one-shot movie X amount of years later, however long it's been, just to catch up would be nice.
I would agree with that. I didn't watch the whole series, but I saw enough of it to know that it was charming. It was really well done. So, yeah, revival, but just as a one-shot or something like that. But definitely, if you haven't seen Eureka, go out of your way to find it. It is quite good.
I'm a fan. I'm on the review, and it's all on Amazon Prime.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Right now, if you want to go back and watch any of it.
All right.
So, cool. I thought that was a good way to start the year. So,
yes. Yeah.
I'm going to describe a couple of TV shows to you guys. All right?
Okay.
They might both be real.
Oh, boy.
They might both be fake.
Oh, no.
One of them may be real and one of them may be fake. It is up to you to decide.
I love games.
Okay. But we're gonna listen to both of them before you vocalize your answer.
Okay.
All right.
Okay?
So, are you ready?
Yeah.
I am prepared.
Our first television is Snake Charmer, 1978-79. Set in the early Middle Ages, this show followed Seamus Broadbean, an Irish farmer trying desperately to feed his family. The first episode finds Seamus constantly fighting and chasing snakes from his farm while his wife and mother-in-law proclaim his basic uselessness. Things look pretty bleak until his wife meets Patrick, an attractive young missionary who promises to help the family with their snake problem in exchange for a place to stay for a while. She badgers a suspicious Seamus until he agrees, but unbeknownst to all of them, not yet St. Patrick doesn't actually know how to get rid of the snakes, and each episode is another scheme to rid the Broadbean farm of its slithery sinners.
Okay.
Monkey, 1978. An immortal human-monkey hybrid, the punkiest monkey that ever popped, with magic powers, who is born from an egg on a mountaintop, joins a Buddhist monk, who's actually a woman, on a pilgrimage to India. They're accompanied by a water monster and ex-cannibal named Sandy, and a pig monster named Pigsy. They travel on a cloud they can control, and sometimes on a shape-changing dragon, who serves as the group's horse. The horse, of course, can talk.
Can we ask questions?
Well, I've not seen either, so, I mean, I've only got my paragraphs here.
So, snap judgment thing.
Snap judgment thing. Okay. Are you sticking with American television shows, or can they be
nope.
from...
It is too easy for you to reach into your memories of old esoteric television
right.
for me to stick with America.
Yeah, I've watched a lot of Cozy. So, okay. I'm going to say Monkey is real and the snake one is not.
That is also my guess.
So what tipped you off?
I literally a guess. Like, Monkey sounds like something that I would see on, like, a Bollywood-type level.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Whereas the snake one is, like... Because you said the snake one, like, came out, like, the late 70s. And, like, I don't know. That's a bit too clever for that decade.
I'm like, it's clearly not an American thing, because this is something that I would have at least heard of. It's not a British thing, because... Again, something I probably would have heard of. Nowhere else in the world would they have really cared enough about early St. Patrick to drive out the snakes. Monkey, on the other hand, sounds absolutely, like Darren said, something you would see on Bollywood or something like that. At first, I mean, for a minute there, I thought you were talking about Dragon Ball.
Yeah, no, 70s Japanese TV, I could see
yes.
it, you know, because we had, like, you know, Japanese Spider-Man and all that, and this sounds right up that alley, complete with the talking horse, so yeah, that's my final answer. Monkey is real, snake whatever is not.
Yes.
Well, you are both absolutely correct.
Yay!
Snake Charmer came out of my, you know, head. Monkey came out of a Chinese folktale but was aired in Japan.
Okay.
52 episodes.
52 episodes!
1978 to 1980.
Oh, man. Wow.
So, all right.
And now I'm Googling monkey TV show.
Monkey.
So I don't know if this is something that's going to stick around every month or if it'll be in every other or whatnot.
I love the idea, though.
But...
Oh my God.
I'm just trying things out today.
Yeah.
I'm showing them a picture of...
Oh, yeah.
For those listening at home, I'm holding my phone up to the webcam.
Oh, yeah. Jeremy Sachs voiced the dragon horse in dub. You know, he was the waiter guy from Fawlty Towers. Anyway, so we are going to jump into Trailer Park Roundup, starting with Detective Knight, a Bruce Willis movie. I want it to be good. But after seeing this, I think it's going to lean into that preachy before it tells a good story kind of thing. Because the trailer gives us this indication that the villain is going to dress himself up as a cop in order to be basically the anti-John McClane. So send in Bruce Willis to take him out, I guess. Barbie. All right. I had no hopes for this.
The trailer, man.
Spoofing the opening of 2001, A Space Odyssey. This movie may be awful, but that teaser trailer is worth every one of its minute 14 second runtime.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Oh, geez.
So good.
65, from the writers of The Quiet Place, which the trailer will not let you forget, what happens when future Adam Driver gets sent to the time of the dinosaurs on a movie that promises to be one really, really long escort mission?
Ugh.
Scream 6. The Scream franchise has finally become what it sought to satirize in the 90s, a title that some thought had been earned in 2000 with Scream 3. Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. Quick, we need a Spider-Man villain. I got it. Let's use Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Okay. First movie was all right. I'm sure this one will be too.
Oh, yeah, it'll be good. It'll be good.
Knock at the Cabin. The victorious return of M. Night Shyamalan. Dave Bautista and friends hold a family captive in their cabin with a simple statement. You must choose which of the three of you will die in order to prevent the apocalypse. Two parents, one child. Don't Google it. Someone's got to go or the whole world will end. Sounds like fun, M. Night Shyamalan. So I'm going to take that and run right into Wrong Answers Only. M. Night Shyamalan is famous for twists in his movies. Knock at the Cabin? What's the twist?
The twist is... nobody actually has to die, but they do have to make a sacrifice. So I'm going to say one of them has to be subjected to a 24-hour viewing of Batman and Robin, just on repeat for 24 hours.
My guess is that Dave Bautista's character can't pronounce a hard T. So what he actually means is one of you has to diet.
Which is weird because nobody in the family looks like they need to diet.
Yeah, but that's still a sacrifice.
Ooh.
My backup wrong answer is that it turns out that it's all a giant misunderstanding and they're actually there from Publishers Clearing House.
See, I think there's just no twist. That's the twist.
Ooh.
It's very meta.
Or the whole thing is really just going to be a Last Airbender prequel.
I forgot about that movie. Thank you.
You're welcome. Well, they're in Amazon making one, too.
Yes.
Yep. Cool.
But that one's not going to be...
And they're making a new animated one following the next...
Yeah, they're
going to
make a new
Earthbender
animated series, as well as they're doing an animated movie about adult Aang.
I am
very curious about the stuff coming out of Avatar Studios.
Yeah.
Well, moving from there, reviews. Darren, did you watch anything?
Yeah, I watched a little-known film. It was a 1994 American sci-fi horror comedy. I don't know if you've heard of it. It was the first big role that Denise Richards ever had.
Huh. Man, I wonder what this could be.
It also stars Paul Walker.
Ooh, Paul Walker.
And
man,
it's called Tammy and the T-Rex.
I've not heard of this.
Tammy and the T-Rex. Man, this is...
Yeah. It was also known as Tanny with N's and the Teenage T-Rex, because that's what the title screen actually says. Because they couldn't be bothered to spell check the title screen.
Okay. Huh.
So if you're unfamiliar with this, it starts off with Denise Richards, Tammy, at cheerleader practice, looking as hot as 90s Denise Richards does.
Right.
And her new boyfriend, Michael, walks in from football practice, and they hang out. And shortly after, Tammy's violent and jealous ex-boyfriend, Billy, arrives with his gang. They harass Michael. Michael gets in a fight with Billy, and the other two police have to break him up. Billy is dragged away screaming something along the lines of, "I'll fucking kill you," but without the F-bomb because this movie got a PG.
There's your
And Tammy, unable to deal with this, runs off crying, even though, Michael was literally just defending himself. She was just all like, "I can't believe you did the fight. Dude." Anyway, we then take a look at this big old T-Rex, right? It's in a dark warehouse. It looks just like a model or something. And we meet Dr. Wachenstein. I'm pretty sure that's how it's pronounced. I don't remember. I kind of blacked out here and there. But he and his assistant are kind of messing around with it, and it's this big animatronic, and he has the brilliant idea, "I'm going to put a living human brain into this thing so that it can be immortal."
Immortal.
Immortal, yes. Giant immortal robot T-Rex. And eventually, Michael tries to meet up with his girlfriend at night because they're teenagers, clearly played by 20-somethings. And he's interrupted by Billy and his thugs, and he gets thrown into a lion den because there was one nearby. And
very biblical.
He gets the Duke from G.I. Joe treatment in that he probably should be dead, but it's okay. He's just in a coma.
No.
He's taken to the hospital, and he's declared dead. And Dr. Wachenstein basically does that illegally so he can take his brain and put it inside the T-Rex. And then Michael does what most people would do when their brain is put inside a T-Rex. He went a little loco, loco. He broke out and went on a rampage. And this movie is supposed to be gory, but the effects are so bad that it's charming.
There's one point like that,
like the brain surgery bit for Michael, like that looks pretty good, right? I mean, you can see the brain and all that. It's clearly fake, but whatever. But there's one point where like Dino Michael like bites this guy, right, and rips his guts out, and you can see he's just holding fake guts in front of a clean T-shirt. And that's the point where you're like, if you didn't know this was a B movie, now you do.
Oh.
You know? And at one point, he comes across Tammy, and she figures out that it's Michael as the dinosaur. And she's able to like calm him down, and they even like take a nap at one point, and they cuddle, and the dinosaur is kind of reaching his little tiny arm over her because he's a T-Rex. He has small arms. And eventually the police catch up with him, and they're after the T-Rex because it's a freaking T-Rex. Michael does manage to kill the doctor, but not before his body is mostly destroyed, but it's okay. Tammy, high school cheerleader, is able to not only recover his brain, but she has the knowledge and technology to put it in this big tube of goo and whatever and connect wires and stuff to it. So he's connected to a camcorder so he can talk to her and he can see her and they can communicate. Because that's
That girl's going places.
That girl is going places. And the final scene is Denise Richards doing a striptease for the brain in a jar. Because, well, you know, I mean, you know, intimacy. I mean, people who are just brains in jars, they still need intimacy. And so she does that thing, and it's really hot. There's no nudity, but he short circuits. The jar sparks, and that's it. That's the movie. And I give this 4. That was a thing out of 5.
Okay.
Brains in jars need love, too.
They do.
Well, I watched a few movies besides the random one. So we'll start with Glass Onion, spoiler-free review.
Thank you.
From the team that brought us Knives Out comes another mystery with Benoit Blanc. Now, Glass Onion is a closed-circle murder mystery. Closed-circle mystery means that it has a limited number of characters that could be the, you know, the culprit, etc. And I don't want to spoil it, so the plot will be left out for the most part. Miles Braun, played by Edward Norton, invites a group of friends to his private island during the COVID lockdowns for a murder mystery. And someone on the guest list somehow got Benoit Blanc, the famed detective, to come along as well. When a real mystery comes up, Blanc's on the case. Now, what I can tell you is that this movie is very funny, very well shot, incredibly well paced, well worth your time. Also notable is the final film appearance of both Angela Lansbury in a Murder, She Wrote Easter egg and Stephen Sondheim. And also a shot of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar playing Among Us at one point. Anyway,
why not?
The mystery is good. The characters are delightfully awful. So the thing about Knives Out was that most of the characters were very fleshed out, and they were also pretty well all awful people. Same kind of thing here. The payoff at the end is truly just chef's kiss. The villain is predictable, but the reason and the reveal is so wonderful that it's worth it. Solid A. Check this one out. So next I watched 7 Women and a Murder because I was on a mystery kick. It's a locked room mystery, which means that your cast characters can't leave. This one is Italian, showcasing 7 women who are all trying to determine which of them killed the family patriarch. So we have the soon-to-be ex-wife, the alcoholic mother-in-law, the eldest daughter who's just arrived, the youngest daughter who was up all night, the spinster aunt, the suspiciously attractive maid wearing high heels, and the mistress. The movie is trying to be a satire of sorts and is a referential comedy. It's doing a lot of those like big orchestra hits when normal things are happening. Unfortunately, despite a few very funny parts in the middle, the action loses its steam in the middle of the second act, and it never quite builds it back up again.
Oh.
It's not bad, but there are better movies to see. B-.
Okay.
Mm. White Noise. Okay, this one's the newest, like, the Adam Driver movie that just released for us a couple of days ago on Netflix. It's a surrealist comedy, and I've done a few of these, you know. White Noise is equal parts inspired and exasperating. Don Cheadle is great. Adam Driver is good. The cast is fine. The kids, Justin, I think you and I will agree, if you ever watch any of it, that the kids are portrayed accurately.
Enough said.
Oh, boy.
Mm-hmm. It is also kind of exasperating. You know, a slice of life blended family, it's put into this extraordinary situation when a trucker with a dangerous chemical load crashes into a train, causing an explosion, and first a feathery plume, then a billowing cloud, then a toxic air event. It's an interesting postmodern comedy. If you like the indie vibe and or Adam Driver or Don Cheadle, it's probably worth your time. The exasperating parts outweighed the inspired parts for me, and some of the responses to a catastrophe were just a little bit too on the nose considering our last couple of years for me to be able to kind of laugh at the silliness of it. It's like, oh, you're not being satirical. That's how people behave.
Yeah.
So, but it's a B. And so since this week has been a bit of a Dave Bautista kick, what with Knock at the Cabin trailer and glass onion. While I was working on supper last night, I decided to turn on My Spy, a movie from 2020.
I was interested in this one.
It's a callous tough guy is outclassed by cute kid movie, wherein Dave Bautista plays the tough guy spy. The more I watch Dave Bautista, the more I worry that he doesn't have the range to lead movies. I mean, clearly he's a charismatic guy, but he really needs to do a few Hercules in New York style of movies to build his acting chops first. In 5 years, Bautista is going to be an amazing leading man if he's still getting leading man roles. As a member of an ensemble, he is amazing. He is so good in Glass Onion. He's so good in the Guardians of the Galaxy stuff. He is a very funny, charismatic character in those.
I would argue that when you look at wrestlers turned actors, Dave Bautista is probably the best one.
He's certainly in the top five. You know, I'm fine with that. And that's what I mean, is he'll be amazing if he keeps at it. But if they keep putting him in stuff like this, he doesn't quite have the charm to do a kid's movie.
Okay.
There's not a lot to hate about it, but there's also not a lot to recommend it either. And at the end of the day, it's getting a C from me. Like, this is one of those where you turn it on and you fold laundry, you know?
Okay.
So you don't have to pay attention. And that's all of the extra movies that I watched besides the random movie review. So if there's no other business to tend to...
Right here.
Okay, Darren.
And now it is time for Darren's Trivial Trivia.
So, you've all seen Star Wars The Phantom Menace.
Yes. Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, for better or for worse.
It's got one of my favorite new characters in it.
Sure. When Liam Neeson's character Qui-Gon Jinn uses his communicator to talk to the Jedi Council, you know, that cylindrical object?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's actually a redecorated Sensor Excel razor for women.
Huh.
Probably made for some silky smooth communications.
And here I thought he just stole the director's pen.
All right.
No, just, you know, nice and smooth in between takes. That's it. That's all I had.
Well, thank you. Well, then it's time for the random movie review. Monsieur Kent?
Oh, the lights are down low. The popcorn is hot. The drinks are cold. Settle in for the cinematic universe of Chad's Random Movie Review.
By the roll of the dice, the next movie is The Mask of Zorro.
Ooh.
This month, however, has me watching The Outsider, a film set in Japan in 1954, except the car they're driving when they pick up our main character from jail is a 1960 Chrysler Imperial. Honestly, it's like smokestacks in Kansas. Just took me right out of it. In the opening, we meet Nick, the only white guy in a Japanese prison. What's he doing there? We don't know. He seems to be trying to keep his head down, and when he saves a man's life, he's punished for it. But he seems to relish, you know, being in solitary and just relaxing for a bit. When he saves his cellmate's life, however, he's rewarded with release when the family springs him from the joint. We then get this wonderful two-hour experience of Jared Leto channeling his inner Derek Zoolander with variations of Magnum, Blue Steel, and El Tigre facial expressions. See, I think this movie was trying to tell the story of Nick's rise in the Yakuza, but instead we get a mostly silent Leto, existing while things in the world happen around him. He punches people, he hits people with typewriters, he generally acts violently and impetuously, and I think we're supposed to think that this makes him particularly dangerous or effective as a Yakuza. Instead, it makes him look disrespectful, kind of stupid, and a liability. Anyway, his antics apparently work because the movie must go on, because after messing up and then removing his fingertips on a couple of fingers to show how sorry he is, Nick's made an official member of the family.
That's how it goes.
He promptly begins an affair with his brother's sister. I'll let that one sit for a while. And engages in those delightfully violent and bloody activities of a Yakuza. Things happen. What things? It doesn't matter.
Things.
Most of this film doesn't matter. Here's the things that matter. Nick becomes a Yakuza. Nick gets his sister girlfriend pregnant. Sister girlfriend is assaulted by one of the other Yakuza brothers. I'll let that one sit. Who then joins a different family. The patriarch is killed. The brother is killed. Nick goes and kills the traitor brother and becomes the new head of the family because he was adopted or some shit. Hooray! White guy does Japan better than the Japanese. Again.
Ugh.
I honestly wish it was good.
Aw.
It has the bones of a really good crime thriller. Unfortunately, it gets lost in its own lust for blood and gore. Justin, don't watch this. They really lean into the show don't tell of violence.
Ugh.
Have you ever wanted to see what seppuku looks like? This is the film for you. Mm. You ever wanted to see what otoshime looks like? That's where they cut the fingertips off.
Mm-hmm.
This is the film for you. Mm. You know, I'm fine with violence in movies, typically. I didn't need to see somebody doing that seppuku in the first 15 minutes. I didn't need to see fingers coming off. I just didn't. They were going for gritty. They landed in a place that was almost parody with the amount of grotesque violence and gore. Leto is unconvincing. The total number of his lines could probably be counted on his shortened fingers and toes. It's not a terrible movie, but it's also not a compelling movie. There's just not enough charisma in the mains to make it work. There's no investment, either in the world or in the conflict. I wanted to like it, but in watching it, what I got was a generic gangster movie set in post-World War II Japan. Despite what I would have liked, don't be like me. With no other business.
I appreciate the warning about the excessive gore and stuff like that. But as soon as you said Jared Leto was in it, I knew I didn't want to watch it.
Hmm. It wasn't Morbin time for him.
No.
No. We still have to see that. It's on Netflix. We need to. With no other business, thanks to our sponsors, Shirtosaurus and Gamefly. Check out news and reviews not on the podcast on the website geekcavepodcast.com. Join the Discord for fun conversation and tell your friends all about where to find us, including Podbean, Apple Podcast, Amazon, GoodPod, and so forth. Don't forget to check out our other offerings, include You Want Me to Watch What in Week 3, then head over to the YouTube channel to see Geek Cave Plays, and hopefully Retromantics is coming back soon.
Soon.
For Kent Harris, our DM, setting the world. For Darren Wright, our rogue mastermind. For Justin White, our charismatic bard. I'm Chad Savage. Hey, was that a barbarian joke? Thanks for listening, and remember, everyone is a geek for something.